You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined, as always, by Harrison Fagan. Harrison, the Lakers lost a tough game to the Warriors in overtime. This means that they are basically the best team to challenge the Warriors if they were to make it to the playoffs, right? Like, the Warriors have to be a lot more comfortable taking a look at the standings and knowing that they probably won't have to face the Lakers.
The Warriors, for whatever bizarre, weird, surely not spending time in Los Angeles the night before reason, have been played very tough by the Lakers over the last couple of years, and that continued tonight. And I think it's probably because, I mean, it would be a little bit weird. Like, think about it. If you showed up to a pickup game and all of a sudden a younger looking version of you just showed up and started playing exactly the same way, it would be a little disconcerting. And that's what they have. That's what the Lakers have when Ingram takes on Durant.
I would probably take out my phone and grab a video of somebody else doing a Euro stumble, to be completely honest.
If another guy falls down on the floor, you're just like pointing at them like the Spider-Man meme.
Yeah, finally. I'm not alone down here. Yeah. But the Lakers lose to the Warriors 116 to 114. It would have been nice if those 2 points that the refs took away from the Lakers on a pretty obviously missed travel call or the travel that they called, that would have meant that the Lakers didn't have to go to overtime in the first place. But that's where the Lakers currently are.
Yeah, that was kind of weird because I thought that referees weren't allowed to bet on games, but I guess they must be.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Ayesha Curry tweeted about it again, and it got kind of awkward.
She just tweeted, hashtag rigged. Oh, wait, that one worked out for us.
Yeah, hashtag I'm glad this is rigged.
Yeah.
Although that's kind of a weird, it's a weird hashtag. You should have gone with, I'm glad this is hashtag rigged. But do you, Ayesha, you do your thing out there on social media.
We'll give her social media lessons at some point later.
Yeah. But we wanted to talk about the Kobe ceremony. We wanted to talk a little bit more about the game and actual analysis of the game. And on the other side of the break, we're going to talk. There's been a couple reports recently and reports, and Mitch Kupchak actually just flatly saying this was the case, about the Lakers' hiring tendencies. And Harrison and I apparently have differing views on this slightly. So you guys get to listen to Harrison and me yell at each other again. You guys, for whatever reason, tend to enjoy that.
It's because you're an idiot and they like you being put in your place.
Sure. Go ahead and tell yourself that. Hashtag rigged. As always, make sure you're following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. We are going to, again on Wednesday, be opening up another draft on draft.com and on the draft app. Make sure you guys are joining us for that and using the promo code LOLakers on that, because it's potentially free money. And it's another opportunity to call us idiots beyond adding Harrison all the time and telling him he's an idiot. You guys are hurting his feelings. You guys really should not be continuing to do that.
They're usually telling me you're an idiot, but we should get into the Kobe retirement ceremony.
I thought it was pretty poignant. Like, I thought the Lakers tend to do these moments maybe a little over the top. Kobe Land is a little over the top, I would say. But in terms of the actual ceremony and Kobe's video to himself, which some people were mocking, although it is up for an Oscar. It's on the short list for an Oscar, so go ahead and mock that. Hashtag Oscars.
I just thought the thing that cracked me up was all the people that were like, I can't believe Kobe made his own retirement video. It's like, no, wait. That's not what he made it for. It was not for his jersey retirement originally. But there were people that exist on the internet that thought that Kobe Bryant wrote and directed a jersey retirement video, and that it was not for, you know, other reasons that he would have done that. And there were also people that thought that I legitimately did not know that Kobe was not Thomas Bryant's father.
He isn't?
No, apparently not. As like 300 people in my mentions told me that just don't understand what humor is.
Huh. Well, that's too bad, Thomas. I'm way lower on Thomas Bryant now that I know he isn't the spawn of Kobe. That's too bad.
Yep.
But the Lakers, I wanted to quickly talk about the game itself. It was a weird one, right? Kevin Durant didn't shoot very well at all. Steph Curry didn't play. Draymond Green didn't play. Klay Thompson was in foul trouble early. Brandon Ingram, for some reason.
Him and Durant shot horribly.
Yeah, it was. And yet the Warriors and the Lakers still combined to score, what is it? Almost 240 points or 230 yep. points. That's these guys are insanely good at basketball. But yep. I thought the number one takeaway that I had from the Lakers standpoint is, why is Corey Brewer still playing NBA minutes in the year of our Lord 2017? Like, why is this a thing? Can we leave him in 2017 when we change over to 2018?
I think it's the consecutive game streak.
It's so bad. He is so bad.
Like that's what it has to be. Like I can't really see another legit explanation for it at this point, because he really, like, at the beginning of the year, his energy, whatever, like it gave them a little something that they didn't necessarily have otherwise, but they'd be so much better off just giving those more minutes to Ingram and or Kuzma
or Hart.
Hart, yeah, he's been really good too. And the Corey Brewer experience, I don't think is very valuable anymore for the Lakers, is emphasized by the team being outscored by almost 5 points per 100 possessions while he's on the floor. Which the only guys worse than that right now are Bogut, Nance, Caruso, Dang, and Zubats.
I think at one point tonight, there was a stretch in which Corey Brewer lined up for a jump ball. Andre Iguodala slipped in front of him and got that loose ball. And then on the other end, gave up a dunk, I believe, again to Iguodala. And then on the offensive end, might have run into somebody, which wouldn't shock anybody. And then on the defensive end, he got a rebound. Way to go. And then he had a wide-open player in front of him for a breakaway and somehow messed up that pass by firing it way too hard, the way, you know, back in the day, NBA Live, you would have your player on turbo, and if you hit pass, somehow passes were harder on turbo. And it was that same kind of thing. And I'm just watching this, and the whole time this is happening, Josh Hart is sitting over there on the bench. Hart subs in. The Lakers look a little bit more controlled on offense. And he just immediately felt it as soon as Corey Brewer went off the bench or off the court. And then somebody made another good point tonight that really the Lakers' most out of control players, it's hard.
Were the guys on the bench celebrating Larry Nance Jr. ending Kevin Durant's life?
Kevin Durant died three times in the same game, but
and then came back to life and hit a game winner.
Yeah, and on the fifth day he hath risen. But you look at the Lakers roster and the guys who most often make you kind of just say, like, what are you actually doing out there? Are Corey Brewer, for one. And then the other one, somehow, is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And at some point, one day, we will leave behind this narrative that somehow veterans are just smarter because they are older than young players. And
yeah, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's J.R. Smith shot selection completely excused by his veteranness. I mean,
insane.
he's a good defender, and like he shows stuff sometimes, but he just thinks that he's like the second highest paid player on the Lakers, and he has decided that means that he can take whatever the hell shots he wants, because he takes some of the worst shots I've ever seen in my life from a guy who is considered like kind of a souped up 3-and-D type player.
Yeah, he's missing on
like some serious like hot garbage. Like that final shot of regulation was just god awful. Like Luke called a timeout too early and people got pissed at him a couple weeks ago, but that was one where he needed to call timeout. Like KCP, like given his shot selection on the night, coming down with a full head of steam, that was not a possession they were going to get a good look on. That
it wasn't even a full head of steam. Like he was weaving through, I think he got the rebound at about 6 or 7 seconds to go. And that is a ton of time to get the ball down the court and get a decent look. And somehow he dribbled around for 6 seconds and fired up a shot from 35 feet. So in that six
You know
seconds,
that shot was bad because Kobe immediately pursed his lips, looked off into the distance, and then took his family out of there.
Yeah.
He's like, no, my daughters do not need to watch this anymore. This is unacceptable.
Kobe's like covering their eyes to look away from that, guys. We're going to keep talking about this game here in a second. We're going to pay some bills too. But I also just I want to absolutely reiterate the best way that you guys can support the show. You guys have been great with iTunes reviews, those 5-star iTunes reviews. Those are really good for the show. But the best way to continue to make sure that Harrison and I can keep this thing going and keep the lights on is if we continue to support those companies that are kind enough to support us. This coming Wednesday, as with most Wednesdays, we have a draft coming up, and it's a really fun activity. It's a really fun experience. It's a cool...
You can play with us. You can beat us. You can take our money.
The best.
No one's done it yet, but you can. You theoretically could take my money. I'm just too good.
The best 2 days, I would say, in a fantasy player's season are draft day and if and when you make the finals in that league. And shouts to myself. I am in the finals of both of my fantasy football leagues. Go ahead, dust my shoulders off for that one.
No one cares, Anthony.
All right, I know. I care. It's like $1,000 on one. But we got, with this draft thing, every single time you partake in a draft, it's draft night all over again, and there's no attachment beyond that time. So if you happen to draft Joel Embiid, you don't have to then worry about the 4 nights of the 7 that he usually takes off the remainder of the season. If you want to draft Kevin Durant, you don't have to worry about
him leaving your team in free agency for a team that beat you.
Exactly, for the team that might win the championship. So all of those things, make sure you guys continue to support Draft.com. They've been awesome with us. It's a really cool system by which to compete against me and Harrison. That's Draft.com and the Draft app in iTunes and anywhere you can find applications. Let's take a quick break. So I want to really quickly talk about, there's a couple other aspects of the game tonight. Brook Lopez gets hurt. He hurts his ankle, and it looked really bad. You have kind of a queasy stomach about this stuff, so you didn't really look it up. But I'll just say that his ankle touched the ground.
It didn't look good.
Yeah.
We'll go with that. Let's not give people the graphic description while they're trying to drive their cars.
But he... I was talking to Dr. Jen afterward, and I asked if she wanted to come on the show. She opted not to. I don't blame her. She has work in the morning. But I was asking her, hey, does it matter how big a player is if all that weight is coming down on the angle, on that ankle? And she said that yes and no. That yes, it's a slightly different when somebody who weighs 115 has that amount of weight coming down on their ankle versus somebody who weighs like Lopez upwards of 300 pounds. But even with that said, the other side of that coin basically is that his ankles are built to sustain that amount of weight regularly. So they kind of offset each other to a certain extent. But I will say this, comparing that type of ankle injury to others that the Lakers have maybe seen even this very season, that was somebody who was landing on their ankle. It turns, and all of that weight comes down on it. Versus if you're just defensive sliding, and you don't have all of that downward momentum on that ankle, it's slightly different. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see Lopez miss a good chunk of time. So Harrison, are you ready for the Andrew Bogut starting scenario?
Oh man, I hadn't even considered that, but. I'm pretty sure Twitter, we've said it's become overstated to say that Twitter is going to burn down, but I think Twitter might actually burn down if Andrew Bogut is the starter in the Lakers next game, because Luke Walton says that he wants to keep his amazing bench together. Like, I think Coach Pete, Laker film room, might actually just like start arguing with Luke in the press conference.
Yeah.
Like, he might finally just snap and just be like, why?
I need I mean, considering the
Are
typical,
you stupid?
yeah, the typical, you know, journalists out there and beat reporters treat coaches with kid gloves at all times. That would just be amazing if the question was just why, just why? Why are you?
There were a couple times the coach whose name we get fined for saying definitely got, if not just why, then like not many more words than that for like as a response to one of his answers. It definitely happened.
Shouts to Baxter. I miss you, Baxter. But if you were tasked with putting together the rotation, which way would you go?
You know, like I think at this point, even though I think it would be tough to start him, like, you know, it would be tough to start Randall in 82 games. But at this point, you're hoping that he's not going to have to start 82 games. And I think maybe you just start Randall and you just go small and you try to start with your best lineup or at least one of your better lineups. And if not that, then if you're going to put in a placeholder starter, then at least have it be Thomas Bryant or Ivica Zubats, like theoretically a young guy that you can get something out of moving forward. I just, the Bogut thing, it was one thing if he was actually going to help, but he's been very clearly detrimental in his minutes. And at that point, if you're just playing him, it's the same as the Brewer thing. If you're just playing him for his veteranness, then like, you're doing the team and yourself a disservice. You just aren't putting your best lineups out there. And so at least if you're going to put out a guy who maybe isn't going to help the team win and is just kind of sopping minutes, then at least have it be a guy that's going to benefit you potentially long term, like a Zubats or a Bryant.
Yeah, I would imagine whoever they place there, if it is just a placeholder, is only going to play, you know, the first 5 minutes of each half.
Yeah, and then you put Randall in like normal, and if that's the way they want to do it, then fine. If you're just like, we need to start with a traditional center because tradition, then sure, like go for that. But it's got to be one of these young guys and not Bogut, because there's just no benefit in playing Bogut. Like, he gives you nothing. He's not helping you win more games. He's not good, and it's not like he's part of the team's future. There's just like, honestly, like he should not really be on the roster.
And the team at this point also isn't good enough to where that type of priority, even if, let's say, Andrew Bogut was positively, it wasn't actively detrimental. If the Lakers were better, then okay, yeah, you roll with the guy who is going to keep you in some type of whatever contention that they feel that they're a part of at this point. But they're 10-18. They aren't going to be, they're already
even
out.
Even then, I could see the argument for it, just because it does, like, their lottery pick doesn't matter. So you're just trying to help the guys get some momentum. So if he gives you like a 5% little boost, then sure, go for it. But he's not that guy.
He does not, and the Lakers are not.
Yeah, and the Lakers, well, no, I mean, even if they were at this same level and he helped them a little bit, then I think it still may be worth it. But he doesn't help. And so I just don't see the benefit in it. And it's like they already have all these young guys they have like that are hanging in with teams every single night. Like Ingram was like once again going toe-to-toe with Durant, and they have Lonzo Ball, who's been playing some really strong basketball in December, even though everybody wants to ignore it. And they just have, like, Randall's been really good, and they have these young guys, and you're doing them a disservice if you're playing just this veteran just because he's old. Like, bring in some more of these young guys and see what you can do.
Yep, I completely agree. I would probably, I mean, personally, I'm higher on Thomas Bryant, but I think if you're looking for,
I think at this point, if you're just looking at like the little flashes that they've showed and the, like what their game could ultimately be, I think there's good reason to be higher on Thomas Bryant just because of his floor spacing ability and has a little bit more mobility than Zubats does. But both of them are promising young guys. Just play one of them. Don't play Bogut.
Right. Well, and I was going to actually make the case for Zubats over Bryant. And it's pretty simple. You have to figure out what you have in Zubats, because every single $1 million that the Lakers are going to be working with this upcoming summer is going to matter if they really want to open up as much cap space as it sounds like they want to open up. And that means decision time for Ivica Zubats. And at some point, you have to start figuring out, what do they actually have? Is he worth the
Is
one
he a future
point?
Hall of Famer, or just a guy who goes back and forth between the NBA and the G League? No, yeah. Middle ground.
None whatsoever. All right, we are going to talk about the people who were making the decisions and the way that they got there. And I have kind of an issue with it. Harrison, it sounds like, is not as, this is going to shock you, I'm a little further down on their process than Harrison is. And this is probably going to be a pretty fun conversation. Let's get to it in a second. So Sam Amick wrote an article about Rob Pelinka. It was kind of a press release on...
Okay.
Look how great Rob Pelinka is.
Only one. I do not endorse that take, Sam, if you are listening.
Yes, I don't think we have to worry about him listening. But I don't know if he came off as a favor. I'll put it that way. But he writes this article, and in it he says basically that the Lakers never really took into account other possible candidates to be general manager beyond Rob Pelinka, and I guess by extension Magic Johnson,
is them not considering guys other than Rob Pelinka really that much of a surprise when the other guys were, when Jim Buss and Kupchak were let go, and within like 2 hours Woj was reporting that Pelinka was the front runner, and then like 10 minutes after
that
he was expected to be the GM. Yeah, I mean, like, this wasn't a wide, they didn't cast a wide net, but I thought that the detail that was interesting was Amick wrote that, you know, Pelinka was obviously somebody that Jeannie knew and that she trusted, which, you know, like, duh, like, he was Kobe's agent, he was around, like, it's very clear that they had a relationship.
I mean, I hope they have a relationship when you give the guy's candidate or client $48 million that they don't really deserve, but sure, go ahead.
But anyway, and so, like, here, I'm just going to read from Amick's piece now. Mm-hmm. What's more, the fact he didn't work for an NBA team meant Jeannie could recruit him without seeking the kind of formal permission that would have tipped off Jim Buss and Kupchak to her plan. So I think, like, that's the first time that we've ever had it confirmed that she was just like, yeah, she was going to figure this out and go behind their backs, and, like, that this was in the offing for a while. This was not, like... This was a planned coup.
Mm-hmm. So I want to get back to, though, and then also,
which there almost was, should give you like more faith in it. It was a coup, and like at least it was well planned out, I guess.
I guess. The other aspect of this conversation that we needed to provide context was Mitch Kupchak. I forget where he said it, and I'm sorry that I'm bad at journalism, but he said basically that the only candidate that the Lakers interviewed before they hired Luke Walton was Luke Walton, right? And now that's three key hires within the organization, and there was not just a not wide net. Like, it'd be one thing if it was Luke Walton and it was Brian Shaw and it was Derek Fisher and it was Robert Horry and it was Rick Fox, and those were the only candidates that they interviewed. But there was no net cast at all there. And then it'd be one thing if Jerry West was talked about, or Phil Jackson was talked about, or Kareem or Cooper, or however you want to, whichever Laker greats that you want to talk about are candidates to take over after Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak. And then after that, the only candidates that the Lakers brought in for the role that Pelinka eventually filled were people that were still only affiliated with the Lakers. But there was no net cast whatsoever. It was just Luke Walton is our guy, Magic Johnson is our guy, and then Rob Pelinka is our guy. And for me, look, it's possible that even despite that, Luke Walton, Magic, and Pelinka all wind up still being the best candidates for the job. But I just don't think that there's any way of knowing that if they, at no point in the process, was there anybody else discussed. Like, that's just, it's not a good way to ensure for yourself that the Lakers are getting the absolute best talent into their organization at guys that are building your franchise moving forward. Every single decision that Magic and Pelinka make at this point, I'm going to think, well, is there somebody else out there who the Lakers just didn't even consider who might have been better at making these decisions than Magic and Pelinka? I don't know. And that kind of annoys me.
So I think that that's true. Like, I see what you're saying. And I think the reality is that the Lakers don't know if those other guys that would have been a little bit better or whatever were out there because they didn't interview them. But I think that to say they should cast a wider net is kind of like overgeneralizing a little bit, because it's become like really fashionable for NBA teams to be like, oh, we're looking at all these other teams like cap space guys and their analytics guys and whatever, and like, or like as far as coaches, like their lead, we're looking at all these like hot young lead assistants and stuff like that, and that's what Luke Walton was, and they hired him in part because of the Lakers connection, but also he was considered one of the top head coaching candidates on the market that summer, and so that was legitimately a get, regardless of whether or not they interviewed anyone else, and there was maybe some value in not letting him interview anywhere else if that was their guy, and he was a promising guy, and he was somebody that they knew that they could work with and that they liked and that they wanted to hire.
He was definitely the top candidate on the market at the time.
Yes. And he was a guy that they knew that they could work with, and there's value in that. And so, like, then going down the line, Magic, one of Jeannie's best friends, like, is he the best president of basketball operations candidate on the market? Maybe, but we don't know, but we also don't know that he's like bad or that there necessarily would have been better. And he's, again, somebody that Jeannie knew that she could work with. And then if we look at Pelinka, somebody that Jeannie knew she could work with, checks a lot of the boxes that you would want in like a general manager candidate, is like by all accounts very cap savvy, has shown an ability to recruit players, although it's different to be recruiting them as an agent than as a GM, obviously. But he ticks all these boxes, and he's somebody that she knows she can work with. So let's say they're losing out on like 10 or 20% of the value of like that they would have gotten from looking at other people and going outside of their net of acquaintances that they knew. But like the reality is that they don't make these hires in a vacuum. Like these aren't NBA GM 2K ratings or coaching 2K ratings. You have to be able to work with these people. And anybody who's ever worked in an office knows that it's valuable to work with people that you like and that like, you know, say like aren't going to throw scissors at you. And so like Jeannie Buss and Jim Buss had a very, very dysfunctional relationship. I think it was very valuable for her to find people that she would enjoy working with, people that she knew that she could work with functionally. And so I think that that's why they went the direction that they went. It doesn't necessarily make it right, but it's also not necessarily wrong, because there is value in having that chemistry and cohesion. And I know that was really long-winded, but that's just kind of my thoughts on it.
I don't think that it hurts you, though. Like, it's not like Magic was going to be the president of basketball operations somewhere else, right? Like,
that's fair to say.
And I'm not even.
But how much would they have really gained from like interviewing somebody else and then ultimately going with Magic? Like, was Jeannie really going to go with somebody besides Magic?
We don't know. But that's kind of the problem.
And then with Pelinka,
find me guys in the Lakers organization right now. Like, I understand. I agree. Even. Like, there's a reason I haven't gone out, and it's not a huge priority, or it would never be a priority for me to go out and find the next co-host of the show. Like, you and I work, and I enjoy working alongside you, and therefore I'm going
to
keep writing.
Except for when I tell you to get off Twitter and come and record.
Yeah, I that was annoying. But I don't think you can prioritize that at every single turn. Like, at some point, Luke needs an assistant coach who's willing to step up and challenge him and say, look at all this damn lineup data. Like, look at this. It's staring you in the face. You need to not continue to not play your best guys the most minutes on your roster. And
yeah, there's I get what you're saying. There's a value in not having too many yes men.
Well, yeah. Well, and it's this idea. So Lakers exceptionalism is kind of defined by two terms. On one hand, the more pejorative way of looking at Lakers exceptionalism is with Lakers fans thinking that, yeah, LeBron will just be a Laker because he's going to be a Laker, right? And that is not helpful at all. It's probably actively harmful. And the other way, though, of Lakers exceptionalism being, in my opinion, even more harmful to what the Lakers are looking to do, is this idea that in order to understand what success is in the NBA, or how to attain that success that you think that the Lakers should be lined up for, the only way to attain that success is to have been a Laker at some point, or to be the family of a Laker player or former coach or whatever it might be. That to me is that type of insulated thinking is how you keep making the same mistakes over and over and over and over again. And look, this is why there are some out there who are a little concerned, even when Magic says, look, we don't have to spend all of our money this year. If we don't sign a superstar this year, well, then we'll just keep our cap flexibility and we'll see what we can get maybe next year and the year after that and the year after that. And that sounds an awful lot like what Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss were talking about. And maybe somebody who isn't a former Laker or doesn't think like a former Laker comes in and goes about their business in a different way that a Lakers exceptionalist currently does. And we just will never know whether or not that that's a possibility for the Lakers, because they continue to make that same, I don't know if I want to call it a mistake, but they continue to follow this trend that we have to hire former Lakers. I think Jamal Wilkes' son is now all of a sudden part of the Lakers organization. And it's just, it's maddening, because I know that there are so many smart people out there. Sam Hinkie's just sitting right there. And we saw the fruits of his labor right now with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, even with me being not as high on those guys as the NBA Twitter tends to be. But that guy is sitting right there, and he might inject some different thinking into the Lakers that they probably kind of sort of need, but they won't even consider that as an option because he's not a former Laker. And that's kind of frustrating for me, knowing what the Lakers, what kind of muscles the Lakers could flex if they just decided, hey, we're gonna use this Lakers lore in a capless situation. We can pay as many of the cap geniuses or analytics geniuses as we want, but they choose not to because there aren't very many of those people who aren't former Lakers.
So I get what you're saying, and this is not a reference I ever expected to make on this podcast, but like I get what you're saying. There's a reason that the British like monarchy kind of fell apart like back in like the, you know, like hundreds of years ago because of like too much inbreeding. Like, yep,
turns
too
out
much
incest is a bad thing.
Yeah, like, and to like to take that to its like to the Lakers organization, like too much insular thinking is also not necessarily a good thing. And continuing to when the organization has been struggling, continue to bring in more people that are just like, hey, Lakers is great. It's everyone else who's wrong. You know, like that's obviously not a good idea. But I don't think that's what they're doing. They seem to be making a concerted effort to do things differently. They've tried to distance themselves from the Kobe way of like, you know, grinding themselves into dust and wins are all that matters and like da 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 like mentality. It's there seem to be more of it, and like that there has to be one alpha dog and one guy that powers everything. That seems to be more of an egalitarian approach, more of an everyone matters type thing. Pelinka seems to be very focused on this idea of like getting everyone to maximize and be their best self rather than just maximizing one guy in the way that he's kind of run the organization and like the behind the scenes program with the genius talks type thing that he's bringing in and like all of like the fitness programs that they have the Lakers on. And they're modernizing. It hasn't been as fast as people would like, but they are. And I think that, you know, I get what you're saying about you want to go outside the box sometimes, and I think that that's a legitimate criticism, and sometimes maybe you need to. But in a lot of these cases, there are extenuating circumstances as to why I think that these were fine hires, even though they didn't necessarily look around too much. Like especially the Pelinka case, this new detail where, you know, that she's saying basically that part of the reason was that she didn't want to tip Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak off to her plans. And I think that that's a legitimate concern. If you had that start leaking out that their jobs were in danger and all this stuff, then you have other executives trying to get them over a barrel. You have like the media talking about how much of a tire fire the Lakers are, and like that's not good for their brand. And I think that from like a brand management and like a perception standpoint, that may have somewhat justified going after people that she could target in a quieter manner, and especially when somebody that she knows that she can work well with, that she knows she's going to have a good relationship with, and that Magic has like a good relationship with, and that they know has like a good relationship with Kobe, who, you know, he's not part of the organization anymore, but he's somebody who like is clearly like family to them and matters. And you know, and like more importantly, just again, somebody that Jeannie knows that she can work with and that she has a good dynamic with, because that's important to have a good relationship between owner and GM. You can bring in a guy who's like, it's your first time meeting them. They kill it in all the interviews. And then all of a sudden you're getting like uncomfortable Slack messages all the time from somebody because they're basically stalking you. And it turns out it wasn't that great of an interview and you made a poor choice in hire. And I'm definitely not projecting my own life now.
I just don't think I got that is a possibility in hiring outside the Lakers box, but that's a pretty far.
Okay, that specific scenario is very, very far-fetched. But like, what if they find out down the line that Pelinka has very different goals for how he, or like very different vision, like for how he wants to attain things, and they can't have a civil discussion about it because they just rub each other the wrong way, it turns out. Like, it turns out the interview thing was just kind of an act. Like, you don't know, you're not necessarily doing better just by interviewing people that you don't know.
But isn't that,
you could do better. You could do better, but you aren't necessarily, it's not a guarantee.
Isn't that also not a guarantee though, even with the long history Jeannie and Pelinka have? Like, it's not a guarantee that working alongside Pelinka isn't exactly the same thing as working with Pelinka, while Pelinka's top client happens to be one of the best players in the history of your organization.
That's true. That's very true. I mean, it's like I was saying, like nothing is a certainty. I can just understand the reasoning with which they went about things, but it doesn't mean that it's going to be right, and it doesn't mean that it's going to be successful.
Yeah, I don't know. I think
nothing's guaranteed in life, Anthony. We all die.
I think the hope for me, you just contradicted yourself. But the hope
other than death.
The hope for me is that at some point the Lakers start broadening their focus here, widening their focus and hopefully thinking outside of their box, because it's a little concerning that they continue to follow this trend, and then Magic and Pelinka's quotes very closely resembled the same type of strategy that got Mitch and Jim Buss fired in the first place. In this idea of, well, we'll just have cap space and we'll just sign a superstar because a superstar is going to want to come here because of the Lakers standing, and maybe they'll be better in these free agent negotiation, and maybe their selling points will be better made by Magic and Pelinka. That's highly possible. I mean, Magic and Pelinka are both endlessly more charismatic than Mitch Kupchak is, that's for sure. And
I mean, so is like this paint. Exercise bike that's in front of me as we record.
but maybe that'll have a legit impact. We'll find out. But
after this break.
My hope is that these guys are if things don't work out this summer and they strike out and they don't get a superstar this year, that some more outside the box thinking is brought in, because obviously thinking along the lines of the Lakers are just going to get people because they're the Lakers is not working. We know this now. We have plenty of sample size to back us up and to continue to bring people in based on the thinking that they can only work for the Lakers. And they will only be successful as Lakers if they've been Lakers before. Like, that's not really going to work.
Well, I got good news for you. They're trying to break that trend by bringing in LeBron, and they're trying to recruit him by doing things like throwing lavish jersey retirement parties for Kobe.
Yeah.
just to take us full circle.
It was a fun ceremony. It got a little dusty here in the Irwin household. I'm guessing it didn't get all that dusty for you, Spock.
No. Why would my house be dusty? I clean it.
Good point. Very good point. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm going to send this shout out one more time. Go to draft.com, sign up,
come play with us tomorrow. We will remind you again in the tomorrow morning, but you got to get in on this draft. And like, I'm not saying that you should be afraid that I'm going to beat you, but like, it's probably a guarantee, but maybe you can beat me. Maybe you're scared.
And to your guys' credit, the drafts keep filling out way too quickly. They actually fill out before I've started my day, I've auto drafted all of my teams for the last like 2 weeks. I guess I'll have to try to,
maybe you should set your lineups better, bro.
Apparently yeah. I can't trust the computer.
Yeah.
I got to think outside
the box. I'd understand if all of you were afraid of me, but I'm also going to mock you for it. So
I'm wrong. What I'm saying is I have to think outside the box. I have to bring in some non auto draft
thinking. Oh my god.
And rethink the way
I get out. Get just end the podcast. I'm done with you.